to imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light.
Total photonic reversal.
Photonic reversal.
Photonic reversal with your host, Conan Neutron. Broadcasting from a secret underground lair in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
A gigantic middle finger to everything that is rock about music, rock and roll, and corporate power.
The thing is, though, if you don't laugh, you're going to go on a killing spree with sharp and nails.
Confidence of a hero or a fool, I wasn't exactly certain which.
Could not be more professional.
It means something.
That's my take on it. What's yours?
Protonic reversal!
That's like a science thing, right?
Indeed it is. It's a science thing. It's a science place. It's a scientific fact that we are all up in your face at a time once again for the one, the only protonic reversal. Welcome to it. That's right, episode 448, first episode of 2026. Now, see, New Year's Day would have been the actual first episode, but I was like, we're not going to do that. So this is the first episode. Very excited to bring it to you. Very excited to be bringing you a whole new year of Protonic Reversal. Thank you, everyone, so very much. Coming up in a few minutes, Pal Jenkins of Black Heart Procession, 3 Mile Pilot. Knife Dude, and so much more. Looking forward to bringing that to you. Before we do that, though, welcome to Conan Neutron's Protonic Reversal. I'm your host, Conan Neutron, a rock and roll lifer that's been touring and recording for 26 years, most known for the band Conan Neutron and the Secret Friends. Music is a huge part of my life, and I use the format of this very long-running podcast to talk about music with musicians whose work I enjoy and respect, but who may not be household names. This is episode 448. Now, if this is your first time listening to the show, archives of it are available for free. No ads, no sponsors, no kidding at protonicreversal.com. However, if you want to support the show and get episodes sooner, $1 a month at patreon.com/protonicreversal will gladly achieve that goal. And if you like the show, even as a single episode, please feel free to like, subscribe on your platform of choice, share around on the internet, even leave a review. All that helps people discover the show. It beats back the almighty algorithmic overlords. Yeah, it's just a darn nice thing to do. Okay, so here we are. 2026, man. People get ready. If you know, you know. Pal Jenkins wasn't just in one of the more legendary late 90s, early 2000s bands. He was also in another one. And I'm very excited because one of those actually has stuff happening. So this is a guy that, if you know, you know, needs no introduction. Yet here I am introducing him. I am very excited to talk to Mr. Knife Man himself, Pal Jenkins. How you doing, sir? Tell me about the knife stuff. I was not aware of this. We played San Diego. We played San Diego twice this last year. I had no idea I would have visited. I love knives. Well, that's knives cool. And swords, bladed weapons.
You're welcome anytime to stop in.
So this is it. This is, by the way, lovely shirt. By the way, for the audio listener, it's a is it a switchblade?
They're called butterfly knives.
Butterfly knives. Okay.
We call them Bali Song because that's the original name in the Philippines. These are called
cool
Bali
sounding. Song. That sounds badass. Yeah.
All kinds of fun little tricks.
That's great. Yeah, for the audio listeners, there's some really cool knife work going on right now. That's a very elegant looking knife work. So let's start there. How long you been into knives, man?
Oh man, knife making and knives are a journey when you get going with it. But like you can see behind me, that's some of my knife collection, of my personal collection. Mm-hmm. And then I got a bunch of these ones that I've made.
So cool. Wow.
How did it start? I always collected little knives as a kid. I was into like throwing stars and throwing knives and setting up cardboard boxes and demolishing shit as a kid. So kind of my heart and my adulthood, I kind of came back to realizing I needed a pocket knife, and I bought a crappy pocket knife. I was like, this thing fucking sucks. So yeah. I bought a really good pocket knife for spent a couple hundred dollars on a good pocket knife. And I was like, wow, this is much nicer. Bought another pocket knife and just started naturally growing. And I created a collection of these knives. And I got really into the materials, how they were made, where they were made, the locking mechanisms, the types mm-hmm. of steel, you know, everything. So that just kept growing. And at this time, I also opened a record shop and started selling knives and records. So those things I know about and love. So
they go hand in hand.
Yes. And then we also sold vintage clothing and we did other things like that. So, but we actually just closed the storefront, quick side note, at the beginning of the year, but because I'm just doing a bunch of other things and the knife business making side of it has taken off a little bit more and
right.
the workshop in the backyard and blah, blah, blah. So reverse a second. So I got really into all the different types of knives there are, like different thumb openings, different switchblades, automatics, out the fronts, everything. And the Balisong is really its own kind of like interesting knife. It's, you know, it's just three pieces of metal kind of made together.
Yeah.
It's one of the first one-handed open pocket knives that you could cut something, put it away. It was a sheath and it go back in your pocket. Where normally you'd have to like open a pocket knife like this, pick that that you were holding, cut it, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that's exciting. And the difference between a well-made knife and a not well-made knife is pretty pronounced. And I can say that as someone who at the tender age of 17, moving on my own, bought a lot of really crappy knives at the flea market and be like, oh yeah, these suck.
So yeah, one thing I'll note. So, you know, these cost in the neighborhood of $1,000. So there's cheap Balisongs, and these are made with titanium, S35VN mm-hmm. steel.
Oh my God.
Really very high-end, like, materials, and then the type of milling and the grip and the function, and these are like competitive high-end for flipping knives for the hobby. There's competitions just like you'd
find. Oh really? Oh cool.
Prize money and all this stuff. And yeah. young kids, like we have meetups and group, you know, you have kids that I sell plastic ones for younger kids, but there'll be an 11-year-old kid in the competition with a live blade flipping. And it's a lot like you would see skateboarding. Like, how do they do that and not get hurt?
So
it's
right, right. And the answer is practice, practice, practice.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, those things like this, too. Like, this is my coming up newest trainer, which is a not sharp knife.
Oh, got it. So you can get the weight.
It won't cut you, but you, and it's.
Sure. You know,
and this will sell for a lot less. This is going to be like $260.
Right.
But it performs really well. And there's just all sorts of fun to be had. And so, you know, as I got into this, I realized I started doing YouTube reviews of all the different knives I had and mm-hmm. things and interviews with different makers throughout the pandemic and after. And then I started at some point realizing, you know, and I was going to trade shows. I would go to trade shows twice a year, set up a booth and work, be a judge for competitions, participate in all this stuff, and eventually worked on my own design. 3D modeling and CAD work and blah, 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 and created my own line of knives. And
that's so cool.
That's what I'm doing, as well as a lot of music and different things.
So that's, and that's just to give the plug while we're talking about Acid Works, right? ACIDWRX.
Yes. Right?
And you can, I know you can follow the Instagram account because I just did it right before we went on air because I didn't forget. And I'll put it in the show notes, of course, and all that.
This one's pretty wild.
I love it. That's beautiful. I mean, look, it's not how I expected to start the first show of the year, but I'm all for it. This is very interesting to me. Like, I think that's fascinating.
But one thing I should note too, these slots create tones and rings, and it's purposeful. Like so there's a musical element to these where people really get into the sound of things and the feel.
Love it.
Okay, that's cool. Great. On to other shit. Sorry, everybody.
No. I mean, look, it's not boring. That's for darn sure. To me, your music kind of came to my attention with Black Heart Procession real early on, first and second record. And then I kind of went backwards to 3 Mile Pilot, where it was definitely, I should have known about this, but somehow I didn't. Okay. And I would phrase it in that way that I found out about Drive Like Jehu, I think 6 months after they broke up.
right.
Which is crazy because I lived in Oakland. It wasn't that far away, but it was just stuff traveled slower information-wise than it does now. But I quickly became a devotee of Black Heart Procession and had the great honor of seeing you guys play many times, many lineups over the years.
Okay.
So the bigger band, and also just like I saw a couple of this like the like small format. And I remember distinctly being like first time I saw you, because it's one of those things that pre-internet as we know it now, you don't necessarily know what a band looks like or what the instrumentation is, and you hear the records and there's a lot of stuff going on, but you're like, oh, is he playing is this a saw? Like, what's happening on the stage? Right, like, what is this?
Yeah.
And you would be playing with these bands that, for me, it made sense because I listened to all the bands, but it wasn't necessarily bands that sounded like you guys. And that was one of the first times I was like, oh, that's kind of cool, though, because these bands are both really neat, but they don't sound like each other. It's like some dumb hardcore show where everyone sounds like, you know, some hardcore thing, and they're all interchangeable. Like, it actually sounds different. And
I think because we emerged from punk rock,
right,
in a sense, you know, like even though our music maybe wouldn't be classified as punk rock, to me it has those same kind of, you know, from, yeah, so we kind of formulated with that mentality, so we were already in that scene locally with like friends that were in hardcore bands, and
yeah, sure,
so we play together, you know.
Well, and it also struck me early on, too, because this is also the time I was becoming a very voracious music devourer, if you will, enjoyer, and kind of going back and finding things I missed, too, like finding bands like Joy Division and things along those lines. But my first analog was like, oh, they kind of like are like The Cure without sounding anything like The Cure, which was a pretty broad-based reference point, but you gotta understand, I was like 17, right? So,
I mean, I love The Cure. So.
Yeah, me too. I mean, there's worse things to be compared to geniuses, right? I mean, but in a way that I hadn't heard something from that world, from the world that I existed in and felt so closely to, that had that sound and were and the songs kind of embraced that kind of feel, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of different attempts to describe our music, and I've used few in vain as myself, you know, so it's that I try and just get that out of my head. If anything, I've always been a kind of chameleon, so I'll sing whatever tune I want, you know.
Like you guys are a band that I compare other bands to. I was like, oh, they're kind of doing like a Black Heart Procession kind of deal, you know. Like, but it's not that it sounds like Black Heart Procession, but it's a good shorthand if you know the band. The problem is with being idiosyncratic, though, is that it can be, especially these days, it's like somehow an attribute to sound exactly like another band, which is blows my mind. I'm like, yeah, you get clowned on back in my world back in the day, and you frankly still should be, But
references to us, like, you know, Nick Cave or Leonard Cohen.
Yeah, Nick Cave was one
or Gottlieb and this and that. And yep. I think, sure, those are all accurate comparisons to something. But I definitely, if you take a closer listen to what we're doing, it's obviously kind of on its own little trip, because everything's an influence. So, you know, and nothing is at the same time.
And that definitely became apparent when you got to some of the later records. And I want to get into that. But before we get into that, I went backwards to Three Mile Pilot, which I loved when I finally discovered it. But, like, I'm just curious what that transition was. And I do want to backtrack more about Three Mile Pilot, but just how Black Heart as a thing came together originally.
Okay, so Three Mile Pilot was going, and we were needing an extra musician to help play live with us. And mm-hmm. Toby came into the picture just because he played in local bands around town and was very talented and became friends, and he started playing with us. And him and I then became roommates. And then we started just staying up working on stuff that kind of felt all different. And that's kind of where Black Heart started.
It just didn't feel the same. Didn't feel like it was in the same.
I mean, Dream Hall Pilot is essentially like me with Zach.
Yeah, it's you two guys.
Yeah, Zach's has a very strong personality in his playing, and so it creates this thing. And then Toby and I kind of created this other personality together.
Yeah.
And it's a writing partnership. And I was really feeling, at that time, wanting to write a lot more of my own songs and write mm-hmm. and Toby too, is we just found a connection and easy to kind of get through the song and write something quickly and get the idea to what it should be, easier than, and but then Through Mal Pilot was a big learning. There was so much learning in Through Mal Pilot, touring and playing shows for 10 people. And, you know, by the time Blackheart came around, it was like we kind of knew what we didn't care about and cared about a little bit. And we kind of just cared about making something that felt free enough to do whatever.
So it wasn't like you had like the conceit in your mind, like, oh, it's going to sound like this, and it's going to evoke these kind of feelings or whatever. It was just like that's.
Oh, I definitely think there's a tongue in cheek at times to Blackheart that people don't get.
Oh yeah, I know. Like, I got it.
First record. I mean, if you look, I think every song title might have the word heart in it.
Yeah, that's right. the one with the lady on it, right? Yeah.
Really fucking sad. Really fucking dark. Definitely, we're like. But we were also going through some stuff, breakups, and just young and you know, living in this little cocoon here as roommates, and kind of created this whole little imaginary dark world of stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that also is something where it kind of seemed like you were self-aware of it, but also celebrating is the wrong word, but working through that kind of melancholia, if you will.
In hindsight, I realize that more now. Like we were dealing with, you know, things, and it was coming out in ways for sure. And but you know, music is. I am one of those people, like, I don't know where it comes from. I just open up to it, and this happens, and I try and document it the best I can.
Right.
And I never feel it's good. You know, that's just the curse. So I always am feeling like, I feel like with music, I'm in a battle. Like when I play guitar, I'm like, I'm going to go kick its ass or something.
Pull a knife on it.
Oh, you're my friend. Sometimes I'll have those sweet moments, you know, and then it's like, right back at it. You know, it's making music to me is like a beautiful torture at times. Good
combat.
Yeah, you get geared up. You're geared up. I'm going to war. You know?
Yeah, I get it. And so how are the songs coming together? Are they mostly driven on guitar, organ? Like how was it? Like do you decide early on that it's just kind of no rules with instrumentation, or did you have like a specific like, okay, it's going to be
for
like
this
these
record
things.
You're talking about?
Yeah, the first record.
Or the first record.
Yeah.
The first record. You know, it was, Toby was playing a lot of piano, and I was like, yeah, let's make it a piano-based thing. So, but then I was also writing a lot of more folky kind of like stuff. So it just kind of went together. So it's piano and guitar and saw, and then part of the things we wanted, no rules, we wanted to be able to put synth on things. I was playing like a Taurus synth pedal at the time, live and playing guitar, and then would play musical saw in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were just kind of experimenting and having fun with the recording too. Is like, let's make this as weird as we want to make it. You know, who fucking cares? You know. So
yeah, not like the opposite of just like the AC/DC sort of aesthetic or whatever, right? Which like, you know, the record's going to be the record, and we're not going to think too hard about it necessarily.
We went to record at a really good studio at Bear Creek, which has an amazing Neve console and tons of anything you could want in the studio. And so that really we had that going for us on the first three albums we recorded always at that same place.
Which sound great. I mean, to this day, those records don't sound like dated, really.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm proud of a lot of that stuff in a certain way, as much as I can be, for the experience of doing it. But yeah, definitely always looking to do new stuff.
Yeah, yeah, sure. And it's interesting too. Well, I should also mention that it was years ago, but Toby was on the show, I guess like almost 6 years ago, which is crazy.
Yeah, he mentioned that. Yeah.
It's like, it feels like it was like last week to me, but it's also like I do this every week, so it's always kind of familiar and always different. But yeah, I mean, and great guy, great conversation. And Mario actually has been on the show as well.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well,
he lives like, you know, over that way.
Yeah, yeah, he's a bud. I remember distinctly. I went through. I was like, we're gonna talk about every band that you were in, at least for like a minute or so. And that got so exhausting, we just had BSing about records but for like 45 minutes for the last half of the show. Which, of course, is very easy with that guy. Because
that's quite a record collection.
You know, it was a funny episode just because that. Because I was like, this is going to be the one. We're going to touch on every band you've been in. And I'm not even sure if we did. And it doesn't matter. And nobody cares but me. But yeah, all that.
Start and an end. And then it probably got a little blurry.
Right, exactly. All I know is we were having way more fun just BSing about records. Was it fun for the audience? I don't know. I hope so.
Yeah.
So, I'm
about knives.
Right, exactly. When I mentioned Mario, because he's a lot of people associate him, you know, with more aggressive music, right? You know, Click a Tat, Hot Snakes, Earthless, you know. And honestly, it's like
that became a problem. We toured with Mario. He's a great friend of ours. Amazing drummer. Did great on our tracks.
Yeah.
Half the time with our set, he'd be sitting there. It's like a waste of his talent.
He's waiting around. Yeah, because there's so much space.
I remember at the time, like, I think John from Rock and From the Kid was like, do you think you mind if we like play with your drummer Mario? I was like, dude, you should. You should have that guy play for you. Absolutely.
I love that era of rock. It's so good. I mean, he's such a bombastic. Well, but he has a musicality to it, right? It isn't just bombastic.
Oh, God, yeah. Mario's great. Mario, what Mario has is when you play with him as a musician, he has a vibe that really locks into a groove.
Yeah.
And if you guys are both playing something together and he hits that spot, he gets there.
Well, it's funny because when you think of Black Heart Procession, drums are like a fifth instrument someone's going to think of, right? Yeah. Like, it's not like, which isn't to say that they're not important. It's just like, there's so many other things that when you think of the traditional rock idiom, it's like, oh, you know, what is that? That's an interesting song.
I thought there's like these array of styles and definitely there's, you know, it's like, we kind of have these more quiety ones but we have a lot of rhythm too. When you go back and we've definitely like having ran a studio and being interested in percussion and recording, of course I love, you know, but then if a song doesn't need it, it can be just a boom boom in the background is nice too.
Well, and that's where the both the Cure and the Bad Seeds aspect of it kind of come together, where it's like, no, people like forget how hard that rhythm section's going sometimes, where it's like, you know, it's maybe not be the focus, but that's one of the reasons why.
But when you see it live, you're just like, oh god, they're really doing like,
yeah. Like, this is a rock band. They're playing, they're, you know, which I love. And I always love that about you guys as well. So, all right. So tell me about the first one that I found one and two, like almost at the same time. So tell me about the second record. How did that come to? So the first one, was the first one Touch and Go too? Or was it?
On Cargo.
It's Cargo.
Yeah, and then.
Oh, yeah, then that's right.
First one, released it on Cargo, and that kind of gained some interest from people and floated around, and people liked it. And Corey, it ended up on Corey's desk.
That's right.
And from Touch and Go, and we got a call from Corey right when we were in the studio for the second record. But we had not committed to the label during the second record, so we got out of that contract because there was never really an absolute contract. Mm-hmm. So, and then we were like, heck yeah, you know, anything to get on Touch and Go.
I mean, yeah. So right.
Corey like came out to the studio and visited us. We didn't have a label. It was like a dream situation. And what's funny is we have this funny story, Corey and I. My mom calls me and says, I had my mom collecting my mail, and back then voice messages that came into my message machine.
Sure. Yeah.
So somehow Corey got my number and called my landline. And then my mom says, somebody called you. I wrote down the number here, Corey Rusk. I'm like, what? She said, yes, Corey Rusk. He said, Touch and Go Records.
Amazing.
I was like, give me that number, Mom.
Yeah. Did you write it down? Yeah.
And so I called Corey and we had a great conversation. Because you know what's funny is one of the first labels I ever wrote was literally, because I was a huge Kreutzen fan.
Oh, yeah, sure.
A lot of the early Touch and Go stuff, you know, Big Black and all that. And I wrote Corey and sent him a demo tape of my old band of Three Mile Pilot.
Three Mile Pilot, yeah.
Yeah, but way back. and never got a response. And I was like, ah, you know, they're never going to get that and see it. And they never did. But years later came around and there he was at the studio, the first label I really wanted to be on.
Yeah.
And it was like serendipitous because he was attracted to our music, and that's amazing. So of course we made that happen and had a great time doing all the records we did with Touch and Go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's something where there's also, so the strength of Touch and Go is that you could have like a, you know, a Big Black and then also like Laughing Hyenas and like a Black Heart Procession, Butthole Surfers, and, you know, so on and so on. Manor Astro Man.
It gave validity to you as a band. You were like, okay, we kind of been trying to do some music and finally people are listening. And that was nice. That's a cool thing to kind of have that feeling of like, okay, somebody's taking notice of something, you know? So that was really great. And you have a group of people working for your album that are like friends and cool people, like your age and enthusiastic about what you're doing. And Corey's giving them a job to do it. It was great, you know? So,
and it's like you're part of a bigger whole that's again larger than the sum of its parts. So, two's got I remember being delighted at knowing that there was a waiter number two and waiter number three.
Yeah, we did that whole record of chapters. Yeah, so it became a theme to always do a waiter.
Yeah, I thought that was a stylish move. I was like, oh, that's so cool. Yeah. Was that just something where you're amusing yourself? Was there like a larger kind of scope and scale plan with that?
No, it was purposeful. We had the story about this waiter and this guy waiting and blah, blah, blah. And then we did it. We also had a kind of continuation. Mm-hmm. We did it once and then it came this thing. Well, now we got to do it every time and just keep that story going each time. So every now and then we bring back the waiter and it always has to be one that just suddenly sounds like that. And then we go, this is a waiter. And we kind of give it that treatment. We give it always the same treatment of wind and noise,
right.
like it's recorded outside.
Yeah, because there's one on the fourth record.
And there's other ones too. I think there's like 9 chapters or something.
Yeah, I was gonna say
it. I don't know. Because we gave one to a soundtrack movie that's coming out too.
Oh, that's cool! Awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
So we revisit the waiter.
Waiter Revisited. Well, it's like, do you know the band Chatpile?
What?
The band Chatpile. Are you familiar with them?
No.
They're great, A. B, friends of the show, actual friends. That's fine. But they've gotten fairly big, like for our world, right? Yeah. But they have they have multiple songs called Mask. There's Mask, there's The Mask, there's Mask with a C, there's like, so like, and they're just, they have kept this motif running and are going to continue to keep it running. And it is only because they're delighted internally for doing it. But I just think it's the best thing. And they're all good songs too. That's what's funny. Right. But like, they're,
yeah, I'll check them out.
Yeah. They're sparking a chord with the youngins in a way I have not seen since probably, I don't know, At the Drive-In or something. Not that it's the same way. Fine.
I'll have to check them out.
Yeah. they're great band, great folks. Anyway, Chatpile, everybody, look them up. So what's going on? You're on Touch and Go. You've made sort of common cause with a bunch of other different like-minded bands, like-minded people, getting out in the world, so on and so on, right?
Yeah, and then, toured a bunch. And then three, we had already had some left. Three came up real quick because we had already some leftover songs from the previous session.
Oh, okay. So that makes sense because I always kind of thought two and three had a real kind of similar vibe, right? Similar sound. Okay, that makes sense.
So two and three came out pretty quick together, like all within a year probably or something, with a bunch of touring around it. And then four, The Spell, I think it was. No, wait.
Four's, not to correct you, sir, but. the tropical one.
Mortal Tropico happened at that time. And that was when I bought equipment and started recording our own stuff. And actually, the room I'm in right now was the studio before, and the living room was where we recorded the drums. And we did that whole album here in this house.
That's awesome.
and bought a 2-inch 24 track and a Neotech console and a bunch of gear and got really deep into that and mixed the and recorded the whole record here at this house. Yeah.
And so that's a record that is a little different than the other ones. You know, it was a kind of purposefully it felt that way, like a little more romantic, kind of less maudlin, move the attribute of the romanticism up.
I think we liked the like kind of calypso-y kind of vibe that we always felt was in Blackheart. And there, we also always, if you listen to parts of Three, there's almost like a trip hop kind of thing. And we mm-hmm. always, their trip hop kind of Latin feel a little bit in there too. Sure. So like we would sneak it in these weird ways that we could. And so Immortal Tropico, that started happen a bit more because we could have more of our friends that lived locally play on that record because it was here at my house. And so we started inviting different friends over to play, really great upright bass players and, you know, just different things. Could have backup singers. And we did that all here. And that's how that came together. And that took us down that whole path.
Yeah. And that one is... it's funny you mention that because it has almost sort of a like party feel is not exactly correct, but a closer to that than maybe some of the earlier stuff. Like it has a
definitely think that it's more of a journey because there's a lot of like darker stuff on that record, right. But the lyrics to a lot of even what would you call more upbeat and the chord structure are darker chord structures based, but with an upbeat flavor.
Right, and it's not like, you know, it wasn't like a change up like Radiohead was doing or something at the time or something. Like, it wasn't that crazy, but it was something where there was a sort of like, oh, at first about that I was like, oh, whatever, it's a good record. Good record's a good record, right? And you still have, like, you'll get like a, you know, a classic tale of lost love and vengeful murder.
The movie we made, and we did the whole video thing, and that was a huge, ton of work. Yeah,
like, and it seemed like
broke the band, and
I was gonna say it seemed like the band was under a lot of stress at the time, at least internally, right?
Yeah, but we made it through that, and that was great. And then I kind of feel that Five, The Spell, is kind of a mixture of those that earlier with that.
I'd agree. I think it's kind of like a
return to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's something where, and it also has its own vibe as well, right? Like, and also, I mean, people overuse the term cinematic, you know, anything that isn't like, that has a remotely anything moody, it's, oh, well, it's so cinematic. Well, that just means it's in a movie. What the hell are you talking about? You know? But I would say that The Spell has some sort of like cinematic elements to it. That is like where it sounds like, oh no, this does have very, a specific kind of movie kind of feel to it.
People are always saying, oh, they should use that in a movie.
Well, yeah.
Go ahead. Tell me about it. Go ahead.
They should. Yeah.
I agree. They really should. It would be great in that movie.
There are directors and music directors and whatever that listen to this show. So I'm just saying. Yeah.
Yeah. We do get those every now and then, but as we get more people saying we should, then we do.
Of course. Yeah. That's usually how it goes. Well, yeah. Oh, I have no connects, but I'll, you know, you should. Oh, thanks. Yeah. We'll get right on that.
Yeah. We thought so much. We went about making our own movie for the music.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's amazing. Like, how did that come to pass? Cause I think that's a lovely, lovely thing.
How did it come to pass?
Yeah. Yeah.
A friend of ours, Matt Hoyt, is a great guy who has passed away, and sadly we lost him, but he was a videographer here in San Diego and an artist altogether, but talk show host, mm-hmm. restaurateur, man, amazing man. He was filming a lot of videos for us and friends around, and he did a couple videos, and we started talking about the story and had this idea, and we said, let's make a fucking video for every song on the record.
Which so many bands have tried to do, right? And it's harder than you think.
I keep hoping it's going to like age well. Like, oh, remember we did that?
Yeah.
It's kind of, I can't watch it.
I mean, it's a cool idea, right? It's just that, yeah, it's also a lot of work as well. I mean,
but it's a great memory. Like the times we had with that were pretty funny. Hilarious shit.
Did you find that to be like an object lesson? Like, oh, let's not do that. Or was it just like, oh, we did that. That's fine.
Yeah, just, it's fine. We did that. Maybe I like making videos and doing things like that. I find it fun. It's fun to kind of put some imagery to your music, and artwork goes. Yeah, I like being involved in all that.
It was kind of like a murder mystery, if I remember right. It's been a long time.
Yeah. It's okay. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's a murder mystery.
Yeah. I thought that was cool. Yeah, Clue, like that kind of.
Yeah, it had a Clue vibe to it.
Yeah. You could. I guess the kids today would say Knives Out, which I do like those movies as well, right?
But Yeah.
Yeah, but it struck me as like, oh, that's an inventive thing. That's kind of a cool thing that's, that's on there. But also one of those things that it's weird to think about that in contemporary terms where there, whether you want to be or not, everything has a video element now, right?
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, like I said, I was lucky enough I saw you guys a bunch, but like, first time I saw it, I don't even know what these guys look like.
I think if we would have done it all in black and white and not, full, I always wish we could go re-edit that and not make it the full songs. We kind of use the full song and we make a video for the whole song.
It's like,
I would rather condense that whole thing now and make it
excerpts flow into each other. That'd be kind of cool. It's still good.
The story is cool too if you could just make it all flow quicker. Yeah.
Yeah, and then also everybody's...
We weren't thinking like that. That was the first time we ever made something like that.
Well, there was not really a lot of...
Yeah.
Corollaries for that kind of project was
there? Yeah, Floyd the Wall or something.
Well, sure. Like they, but from a
there was the Flaming Lips movie.
Oh yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Bands do it. Yeah.
The excerpt thing would that would play well on like TikTok and stuff. I'm sure people love that. Shorter the better. Which is like, wow, boy, is that not my sensibility? But anyway. all right. So the spell, cool. That's got a waiter on it. That's waiter five on there.
Yeah.
And that's, there's, I had something that I forget what it was. So let's go in. So where's the band at around this time? Okay. So from the spell to six, right. There's like about a 3 year gap in between.
There's a break there. Yeah. Cause Toby moved to Portland. I was down here and we started working on six, but I feel like six is a very like dark record for sure. Like I think at that time too, it's like there was a lot of stuff going on. I was losing hearing in my right ear and just different things like that.
Yeah.
So yeah. And just kind of some thing, both of us personal things in life going on. So I think that record was like, I remember always feeling like, oh yeah, I didn't want to like have to worry about writing an end to the story if I was doing the lyrics. Like I didn't want to have a positive, if it wasn't, things don't always turn out positive. It was very, not very much hope in that record.
It's pretty bleak, yeah.
Very bleak, thank you.
Yeah.
And that became like, a fun narrative at the same time to kind of do, be like, okay, let's not give the answer.
Just lean into it. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Go ahead. Yeah. So, and I like that. I go back to that. And then I was doing a lot of experimenting recording wise too, because I was recorded that whole one at a new studio. So I do think sonically that's recorded in a cool way.
Yeah. That's when he did the, Mr. Tube and the Flying Objects, right? Is that around that time?
I was doing that at that time too. Yeah. For sure. Yeah, you do know about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And
there was a Three Mile Pilot record in there.
Inevitable Past, right? Yeah. That was
thrown in there somewhere in the mix of all those years.
See, at that time, I knew who Three Mile Pilot was. So I may not have known earlier, but at that time, I was like, oh, wow, they're doing something. That's cool.
Yeah.
Which is funny because I actually got into Pinback and Blackheart around the same time. And like, I had no idea. And then someone's like, oh, so you must love Three Mile Pilot. I'm like, what's that? And then I was like, oh, wow. Okay. There's this whole you know, Wizard of Oz, it's black and white, and Dorothy gets the Oz, and suddenly it's color. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, it all becomes clear now. Great.
Yeah, I think it always made sense to us, but then people would be like, oh, okay. And I'm like, yeah, let's, you know, you kind of smush black art together with Pinback, and you get a bit of black art. Or wait, what am I saying? Smush black art with Pinback, and you get a little 3 mile pilot.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's, which is just funny to think about, because I know people that, well, 3 mile pilot, though. I'm like, well, what is that? I don't know what that is. And then, but luckily, you know, I was able to go back and find all the records. Like, oh, this band was great. Like, I just didn't know.
I remember we were a band. We were from San Diego, and it was like, we were a band for like a good couple of years or something. And all of a sudden, there was Stone Temple Pilots, and it was like, but then we try and own that name and be like, no, we've had this name. We've already put a record out with it. You know, and
because the name Pilot was in it, like,
I don't know, maybe that was my own thing, but I remember like people, like in the more mainstream people, maybe thinking the opposite, that we were trying to sound like them, and it was like, right, we weren't even in that world, you know, we were like, that wasn't our world, you know.
Well, and now there's that, what is it, 21 Pilots,
right? Yeah,
that's a, I couldn't pick a song out of a lineup, frankly, but yeah, like, whatever, that's
I mean, that's names or whatever, but
yeah, but, yeah, that's
imagery and naming and title, song titles and all that stuff does really set tone when you go into a listening, yes, experience and perception.
Right.
And I find that interesting, very much interesting nowadays, thinking of things like that, like what's the first perception you give to somebody, everything from a name of something to the first few notes of a song, kind of suddenly.
It's a level set. Yeah. And you're building a world of some kind. So,
yeah, I've always been big on that. People will ask what your main creation or influence for creating is. Mm-hmm. And it is the fact of creating something, you know, whether it's making a knife or making a song. Mm-hmm. I've always loved that feeling of being like, oh, we made this record. Cool. Let's try and sell it at the merch table. You know?
That gives
your life some sort of validation and meaning to kind of hang out with your friends and sell this thing and be made together. And yeah.
Well, absolutely.
And even if it sucked, even if you got it back and you were like, right, 7 inch is like so bad. Let's try and sell it.
But the act of creation and being part of that community and, you know, again, the world creation that can happen with many kinds of creativity, but specifically with music, is very special. And it's a very cool process to be involved with.
Absolutely.
And not anything to be denigrated or short-sold, frankly. Mm-hmm. So since we came up to the 3 Mile Pilot reunion stuff, let's go back in time a little bit, the 3 Mile Pilot. How did 3 Mile Pilot come together? I don't really know that much about that band, frankly.
Okay, 3 Mile Pilot came together because I was in a band called Dark Sarcasm, and Zach and Tom were in a band called Neighborhood Watch, and we used to play backyard shows, garage shows, whatever, together every once in a while, and kind of there was this group of people hanging out, going to shows based around record shopping and music, and they started another project together and said, hey, we're looking for a singer and you want to come try out. And I was like, oh, yeah, cool. I'll try out for your band. And they're like, it's kind of different. We're doing this thing. I was like, cool, I can vibe with that. And we kind of went through some guitar players and did some different things. And at some point in there, we decided, you know, we don't need a guitar player. These songs that we're kind of starting to write are cool how they are. And that's why the first record doesn't have guitar. And then by that time, we had tried out a couple guitar players, but nobody made sense for whatever reason. And I was like, well, I took guitar lessons. I have a guitar in my closet. And,
right. Sure.
And these guys are barely just playing some power chords. I can kind of do that too. So I picked back up the guitar again and started just playing very simple things, did Zach's very melodic bass playing and kind of screaming and singing. And writing a lot. I was really into writing. It's such a chore to do a 3 Mile Pilot show because my lyrics are like this fucking long and I cannot, I literally cannot. And if you look at our record in our albums, they're really, really long songs with longs and lots of lyrics. And it it's so annoying to go and revisit that, but it's beautiful that it was documented. And we actually used to play it live like that. And I used to know all those
and
words.
Remember all them. I keep thinking of when REM did an Unplugged and they played It's the End of the World as We Know It. And like Michael Stipe had like this, you know, it was like one of those scrolls in like the cartoon where it rolls onto the floor and goes down to the other room. And it was like, oh, you poor bastard.
Yeah. That's like one of those songs that you think you're going to go, I know the song. I'll go karaoke this song. And you get up there on the stage to karaoke a song like that. And you're like,
I do not know. Yeah, to crash and burn immediately. Okay. Yeah,
one thing leads to another.
Yep.
If you think of that verse.
Yeah, and it's like, no, you know, like 30% of this song.
It's like a train wreck.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go do that fix song.
Yeah. But yeah, so through Mile Pilot, and interesting in that way that, I don't know, other than like, not something like it, like, you know, Lungfish maybe, but like not really many bands that had that aspect of like a lot of lyrics, right? That were in the world of the underground, because this is like early 91,
yeah,
right, somewhere around that neighborhood.
I remember somebody going, that's when I first heard about Slint. As somebody, I think it was Rick Farr, told me about Rick Farr from
R.I.P.
homie. He was like, you guys are right, have you heard that Slint band? It kind of sounds like there's something similar to you guys. And he was like, it's not exact. Never occurred to me at all. And then when I heard it, I was like, oh yeah, I can see there that, you know, they're quiet for a long time to really loud kind of thing going on. And a lot of that, that was going on a lot in our stuff too. Like,
and it's in the sensibility,
lots of weird lyric-y talky parts.
Yeah, and coming from like having like similar results, but kind of coming from a different place with similar results somehow. That just kind of seemed like you would put them on a shelf together or something. And I felt that way too. I think I can't remember.
Nowadays you would probably put the Slint and the Three Mile Pilot together. You know, why not? Sure.
If people even have shelves.
I think on both sides, neither one of us knew each other's bands during the creating of our process. It was like more later on. You know, we toured with Four Carnation and became friends with those guys, and in their crew of people, kind of meeting people in roundabout ways.
It's a small world. Paho's the homie.
And ending up on the same label through Black.
Oh, of course. Duh. Yeah. Yeah, hello. Another connection. Wasn't even thinking about that.
Yeah.
And it can be funny that works too. You kind of like go around. You're like, oh, you know, so-and-so. Oh, okay. And like you don't meet at the time. And then you do later on. Like, oh, okay. So we were just like, you know, in the next room from each other, like 50 fucking times. Okay. when does Toby come in on through Mob Highway? That's kind of near the
I forget where we were on the storyline. We went all over it. And then
Toby, guitar. No, we just started playing guitar. My bad.
Okay. So I started playing guitar, and that's when we did the second record, was with me on guitar, just kind of making a lot of weird noises and
Chief Assassin, right?
Experimenting with phasers and different kinds of pedals and distortion and really, and then I would say that's when we did Chief Assassin to the Sinister. Then at that time there was kind of like the grunge scene was happening and stuff, and somehow we ended up on DGC Records and did your label record. But then we tried to follow that up, and we had falling out with them. We took rights back to the record, and that's when we did Another Desert, Another Sea.
Right.
During that time, we were kind of refining our sound more with that experimental, and I was kind of getting better at, I mean, it's trying to get better at guitar and songwriting, but there was still a lot of long stuff and things like that. You know, songwriting's interesting, how kind of that same thing where it's like fighting it too, you know, and like learning it. You have to learn a little bit of things and also accept what you are. I think, you know, that accepting your, like I've always been like, now I used to be so insecure about things, and still am. Like getting up on stage, I'm nerve-wracked always, and like I was saying, fighting against your instruments sometimes, but at least like I go, well, I know that what I do, like some people like.
So, yeah, like, right, sure. And so, you, it,
yeah.
it's one of those things you can be your own harshest critic.
That thing that those people that might like it do, I do that. I've done that for 30 years and I can do that really well. It's maybe not what I want to do every day, every moment of the day, but if somebody wants me to play, like, I can go do that.
Right. Like, you could almost like talk yourself out of it if you're not thinking those kinds of things. Like, well, it doesn't matter. Like, whatever.
Right.
Well, it matters quite a bit for a bunch of people, actually.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's, and it may not, and that's kind of, you know, something that I try to do with the show is highlight folks where it does mean a lot to the people that it means a lot to, which isn't necessarily going to be millions.
I don't want
to
play. We're not playing that one.
Right. So, okay. And then there's that, the comp that, was it Songs from an Old Town?
Right. Oh, yeah. That was like a lot of leftover 7-inch EP things, stuff that never made it onto CD at the time. Like, there was a concern to put stuff on CD.
Right. Format of the future, everybody.
Yeah. So we did that compilation and a bunch of 7-inches and EPs. And I think that was kind of like after then, around that time is when Black Art started.
Yeah, because Black Art was around kind of in parallel, but sort of like Black Art was sort of gearing up, and it seemed like Through Mop Out was kind of gearing down. Was that correct?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. And then,
But it's so interesting to me because, again, I was surrounded by so many people that did know Three Mile Pile. I was like, oh, they're so good. You missed out, bro. I'm like, oh, thanks. Appreciate that. So when it comes to the inevitable pass, how did that come together? Was it just because Blackheart was sort of slowing down a little bit at that moment in time? Or
PennDOT got going, you know, because we started Blackheart and then we were touring a lot, and Rob and Zach started playing together and they started doing Pinback. We'd play shows together.
Yeah.
We were all friends. Three Mile Pilot never ended because of the friendships or anything like that. It was always like, you know, Blackheart was a little bit of a happy accident. We didn't plan to make a real band to tour on. We went to make a record that we could listen to, and then suddenly people wanted to hear us play it live more. And we had already played a few shows, but it wasn't, and then we were like, oh, let's put a band together, and just kind of evolved. And then we just kept following up on that. And so our friendships have always been really solid with, you know, between all the people in Three Mile Pilot and Blackheart and Pinback and blah, blah, blah.
Well, yeah. And it seems like there's like a cross pollination, just in general, like being in each other's lives, musically and otherwise, that it didn't seem like there was anything acrimonious or anything along those lines from the outside perspective.
Just life kind of unfolding,
which does happen. Life do happen.
Kids and families and
So, how did the Three Mile Pilot thing? Let's do this.
So yeah, then we were just like, oh, let's, you know, try and work on another record. Basically, as simple as that. We had maybe a few ideas that were lingering from before. We addressed those, and we started writing a bunch of new ones, and we got committed to actually making a new album full of new songs, and that's what Inevitable Past is.
Which is great. I mean, it didn't feel like it was... Oh, no, I was just going to say, it didn't feel like it was... It feels kind of like a continuation, right? It didn't feel like it was... hey everybody, let's fly the flag for this. It just kind of seemed like, oh, it's just like the next thing that they would do. It just happened to be there was like a huge break.
I think so too. I think that I think so too. It's like an evolution for sure, you know.
Yeah.
But I would say it's, I don't know, I think, yeah, evolution, because all those records, every Three Mile Pilot record is different. First one's no guitar at all. Second one is like guitar holding on for dear life. And I like got a little bit more situated. And then the fourth one's like years later, you know, many years later.
Well, yeah, the fourth one's years later. And then there's also like the whole Black Harper session and Pinback of it all, that like, oh, these other bands are kind of more well known or known to different audiences more than maybe the band was originally. But then also, you know, there's a very cathartic kind of thing with Three Mile Pilot that the other bands don't necessarily do. And but it's still like, again, it doesn't seem like an outlier necessarily or anything along those lines. It just feels like more of that complimentary.
Yeah, I can agree with that. So I have to shut my curtains. It's getting okay. dark out for people just walking by looking in.
Sure. makes sense. You're in a place of business.
There's a guy flipping knives in the window again.
Not again.
I finally dropped it.
To be clear, Powell's been flipping knives for, I don't know, 45 minutes now at this point, and there had been no drops. So just let the record show that I saw.
I've been not doing too crazy of stuff, doing a little bit easier stuff, but they do fall quite a bit.
Which is why you have that one that's got the, like, the equivalent of like the wooden sword where you're not going to chop your foot off if you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No missing limbs. That's not happening.
Right.
Where were we?
So 3 Mile Pilot Redux, right? And that, is that something where you're just like, hey, let's do this. This will be fun. Keep expectations low. Was there sort of, any expectations at all with it?
We just wanted to go tour a little and have some fun. We did not have high expectations, like not and at all. I don't think we had any, like,
yeah,
we kind of knew it was just making a record to make a record. We didn't think it was gonna break, yeah, or something like that. I think we thought maybe things like that when we were younger, but I haven't thought that way about music in a long time. Like, I'm sure,
yeah,
I'm hoping it does well, and I would love for something to do great, but. That's not one.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, like, if it looked,
that'd be amazing.
Like, yeah, sounds good. Well, sign me up.
Or it could give me a little more money. So, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, good.
But I'm, I'm excited. Okay, we'll get to current stuff. So, but
we absolutely will. And
go ahead.
Before we do that, I do want to mention Ugly Casanova, though. So how did that come to pass with doing that with Isaac?
So Isaac, we, 3 Mile Pilot early on, played a show in his basement, I think, or in his side living room or something.
Okay.
But that was, I think, before Modest Mouse, 3 Mile Pilot. And he was just kind of a fan, I guess, of our music. And I had no idea, really, until later on, everybody was talking about Modest Mouse. And he reached out in some way to play a show, and he was like, dude, I've listened, you guys played in my house, remember that show? I was like, oh yeah, that's you. He's like, that was me. I was like,
that rules.
Friendship started, and we end up touring together. Mm-hmm. And then after I'd play some songs on his record or do some recording, he came down to San Diego and we drank a bunch of Pacifico. That's why that song is says Pacifico in it. And
great.
Along to the Holidays is a great song.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had this thing, and he came in with this great part of that song. Like, I was really like, okay, this is why Isaac is as good as he is. Cause
yeah,
I think that song's amazing.
Well, totally. And it's something where it was kind of there from the beginning, right? Because the first thing I heard from them was the blue record, 96, the Long Drive for Someone with Nothing to Think About, right? And it just occurs to me now that it's like, oh, it's, I mean, it was right there from the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, is the production a little more, scrappy? Sure. Yeah. But like, it's something where I just remember being absolutely shocked. Like as like, oh, they got a song that's popular. It's like being played at like sporting arenas and stuff.
Mouse is a weird anomaly of a band.
And it sounds just like the rest of their stuff. It's a thing.
Supposed to be big and popular.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like,
they're like, you go to their shows and you tour with them. Their fans are like freaking nuts for them. It's, they have they got a serious crew, a serious thing. And
they're like a gateway band for other freaky music too, which is great. Which is, I mean, it's wonderful when that happens, right?
Isaac's not afraid to kind of do weird shit, and that's great.
Which is awesome, because then you have, I just think about, for myself, like the first band, I heard Nirvana, and that led me down the road to like Sonic Youth and Melvins and Butthole Surfers and Big Black and Fugazi and Drive Like Jehu and so on and so on and so on. But you got to have that band that sort of introduces you to that stuff. Well, maybe you don't now. At the time, you did. At the time, you definitely did.
Now it's so different. It's so cool that there are so many bad things to say about the internet and social media and blah, blah, blah. But as far as creating and being able to just make something, put it out and make a video or a song and being able to put it out and potentially get people interested, it actually makes it very real, like to like who likes something, how many likes there are. I mean, there are ways to manipulate that on across the board. But if it's genuine and people like it and it gets popular, it's still force fed. Music is still definitely force fed through money and everything. But some things do become more popular just because of that, just because if somebody made something cool and it got out to people.
Well, and that's actually a great segue, I think, to talk about, you know, the sort of the appeal for Black Heart Procession and it being, yeah, there are some bands where it's like, oh, that's great. It sounds like the 90s or, you know, it sounds like this era and, you know, or sounds like the 80s. Nothing wrong with that. There's something with Blackheart's music that kind of is a little out of time, a little timeless. And that allows people to discover it as if it was happening like right then. And there's something wonderful about that, even if it's like they weren't there at the moment that it happened. But they get to have this beautiful experience of connecting with something because it was just available to them.
That's very funny you say that, because I've been getting some messages on social media and email or like wherever. I love the new tracks, and it's because Solid Brass is releasing the album one we did many, many years ago, one track at a time over this next.
So people are thinking it's new tracks. That's amazing.
People think it's new songs we're writing. I'm loving hearing the new tracks. And I don't have the heart to tell people like, hey, that's, you know, I don't want to make them feel bad. You
know, like 29 years ago. Yeah.
29 years ago, buddy. Yeah.
But it doesn't sound.
Thank you. You know, but yeah, I like that. They go, oh, the new track is amazing. You know,
yeah. Can't believe you finally released The Waiter number one after all these other numbers. No, but it's, you know, whatever. People, it's a miracle anybody pays any attention to anything at all these days, right? So you can't get mad at that. And not that's into it. And yeah, Solid Brass does so much good stuff. Jason's brought me a lot of bands to this show, which, like, yeah, I'd love to talk to them. It sounds great, you know, because that's. It's yeoman's work for sure, bringing up stuff that was out of print. And, you know, that record, at least, it tends, you know, I could see where it'd be like a lesser known record to the catalog if you didn't come in like when it was coming out, right? Like it's something where they kind of got a little lost in the shuffle comparatively, right? And I think that's wonderful. So I guess, so that's as good a segue as any to talk about the fact that there is Black Heart Procession stuff happening, which is super exciting.
Yeah, we did a Europe stuff or shows last year and toured the U.S. opening for Modest Mouse as well. They asked us back out. We did that. That was amazing.
We were. I remember you played somewhere relatively close to me, and we were out on tour at the same time. And I was really out about it. I was like, I even messaged Toby. I'm like, God damn it.
Well, we'll have to make sure to say hello.
Yeah, consult me first, please. Please clear these dates through my schedule so I can see one of them. Thank you in advance.
Sure, yeah, okay. Right on.
But it made me so happy to see you guys playing again. I was like, oh, that's so cool. That's great.
Yeah. I think it's Toby and I are like, we're like brothers. We've fought and, you know, we're younger. And nowadays it's just like our relationship's just more like, hey, you doing okay? Do you have anything you need? Yeah, cool. I'm good. Yeah. All right. We're just very helpful with each other and things are more relaxed and just, but there also is this sense of like what we're doing right now feels really good for us. You know, I think we have
awesome.
Like 8 songs. We got together and we just wrote like all this stuff just came pouring out of us and we really got a lot of stuff. And we're now kind of trying to siphon through all that stuff and create those 28 pieces. So we're like halfway through, I would say. Maybe not even that.
Well, and there's, you know, he was Belgrade. He was in, you know, pretty far away for a while with the Red Step and all that. And that's, I guess it's
easier. Yeah, so Toby came here before and we did a bunch of writing here for like 3 weeks. Then he flew back home. Then we met on the East Coast and went up to the Catskills to Zeke's farmhouse up there.
Cool.
It's called Nowhere Place. And we were there for also about 3 weeks, a little over, you know, something like that. Did a bunch of writing there. Then he went home, came back again here, and we did a bunch more, and we got all like kind of feeling like, okay, this is what we're looking at. Let's get busy more on it. So now we're kind of sending some files back and forth, but he's coming back again because we like to work together. I don't like sending files back and forth too much. A little bit is okay, but if it's, I like, we get more done when we're in the same room. We kind of, I can help him get his stuff sorted. He can help me get my stuff sorted and tracked, and we give it, gives a reason for us both to be in the room working on stuff. So
there's something kind of impersonal about remote collaboration. I mean, it's easier now than it's ever been, but there is something that you don't get the same thing as you do with humans in a room.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't mean that what you get is not great. It's just, it's not the same.
It's not the same.
So that's super exciting. And is that something where, cause they always talk about when there's a band that hasn't been around as a band for a while, it's like, oh, or, you know, what are they back? Or are they just kind of like doing like a victory lap or like what's happening here? But again, it feels like there's always been such long gaps of time where it just, it seems like you guys just pick right up that it's a thrilling to be like, oh, that's great that that band's doing stuff again. Boy, if ever there was a time for it.
We've just kind of slowed down and cruised through some waters and got, and I feel like now is a really good time for us to be doing stuff, you know, and I think we're on track with our thoughts around it and stuff like that. I, if anything, I get nervous about going out and touring again, like that staying up till whatever time I like, I'll stay up till 3 a.m. in my house, but I don't like being at the bar. It's boring. Travel, you know,
yeah,
maybe I'm a humbug. I don't know, but
no, it definitely loses its luster where you're like, all right, we're doing this. Huh? Okay.
I'd much rather be making a knife in my backyard or
at least you'd have something to show for it. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Like, honestly, the other thing is like, and I've kind of gone into this preface with Toby too, and he feels the same way. It's like, we're going to give this a try and go tour again. But if we start feeling beat down by it, then, you know, because that's the thing, we're playing music that gets hard to recreate every night. And, you know, not to say that's not hard for other musicians. Everybody has a challenge to really present a show and the types of shows that you can present. But sometimes, you know, it's like if Black Earth's a weird weight to bear sometimes, you know.
I can see that. Sure.
Time, you know, so, but, you know, I try not to be like, I'm really enjoying playing guitar and playing and creating right now. So I'm feeling okay about it.
Right. And it's also where you want to have it. You want to have some adventure to it, right? You don't want it to seem like an obligation or something, right? Like that's not the, especially when there's a lot of work to present these songs live. Like you said, I mean, that's the case with a lot of bands and most bands, but at a certain point it's like, okay, you want to feel like you're doing good work. And you want to feel like it's productive, and there's sometimes that maybe everything can be there and it just isn't.
That's why really, like, you know, people don't realize that playing a good show, regardless of what kind of show you're putting on, is really important to the people performing, you know, and when it's not good and you're a band member and you know it's not as good as what you should be doing, you know, regardless of what type of thing you're doing, you know, anything, any work. You know?
Well, and the worst is when people that enjoyed it or come up to tell you how much they enjoy it, and you just got to be like, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Be better, you know.
Like, because if you want to say, well, actually, this was, you know, blah, 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 blah. Here's all the reasons why it wasn't good. And it's like, okay, then now you're talking people out of your opinion. You're being selfish. So, but it is true. And you know, my thing I always say is, I got enough character. I don't need any more character builders. Thank you very much.
The thing I'm finding interesting too is like Black Art, you know, Instagram just started, I think, when Black, you know, we've never really been you know, so it's kind of going to be interesting to kind of have some people again, maybe helping us out, you know, getting things dialed in with the band and kind of representing it now. And, you know, the new music that we're doing feels current for us, you know. So I'm really excited to kind of create some cool show for people to see and really getting into like making something for people, you know.
Cool to hear. Yeah.
You know, and I've kind of gotten past some of the like things maybe that would, but you're never past all your demons, but you know, things in the past that would hold me up from feeling secure. You know, I take beta blockers now before I play because I used to get really nervous. I still do get like nervous before I play. And I like that kind of feeling too at the same time because it makes everything feel like anything could end at any moment. I like that feeling in a set rather than it just being another day at the office.
Just clocking in. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, and there's something really so special when it's like a big show too, where you're like, all right. And then you're like, wow, this is crazy.
Yeah. Meet the energy, meet the occasion, you know?
Yeah. And exactly. You can meet the moment. You can rise to meet the moment. But then there's also like, I know people that, you know, get freaked out by that sometimes, and it's understandable.
It's understandable. It's weird. It's, you know, it's a weird thing to go up and stand up in front of a bunch of people and just, you know, especially if you're not, I'm not that type of person that always walks into a room and jumps up on the table and says, everybody look at me. You know, I'm quiet in the corner kind of doing my thing.
Just flipping your knife like a boss.
But then I have to like strap on a guitar and go play sometimes and sing, you know? So, that's cool.
Well, and there's also a certain responsibility might be the wrong word, but when you're lucky enough to make music that touches people, that means something to people, then there's pressure to a certain degree where you want to make sure this presented the best possible way. You want to make sure people are having like the best experience, but you can't go too far down the Mekong on that or you're going to freak yourself out.
Very well put. Yeah.
So what can people expect? Second drop.
Not bad. I'll leave it on the ground over there and pick up a different one.
Yeah, you're lowering your average a little bit, but you're still doing pretty darn good, man. Like, yeah. So what kind of instrumentation in the live band? Like, what are we looking at here?
For three drops and the interview's over.
Exactly. So third drop and I'm cutting you off. You're out of here. But what can people expect from like a live band? What do you need to present the songs in the way that you want to present them? Who's playing? Like what does it look like?
On this upcoming tours, we're going on the Modest Mouse Ice Cream Floats tour or cruise, which is 4 days. And I think we're doing three shows over those 4 days.
That's right.
Cruise. And
where does that leave from?
Miami to the Dominican Republic.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. It's called Ice Cream Floats and presented by Modest Mouse and a bunch of bands. Really great stuff.
I'll put links for that in the show notes so people can check it out.
Cool, yeah. The Man's playing, obviously Modest Mouse, Built to Spill, Kurt Vile, a bunch of people, yeah.
Are you doing, like, different sets?
We are doing, yes, different sets. That's cool. I'm not sure if we're supposed to say yet or not what we're doing.
Oh, okay.
Well, we have a couple things up our sleeves. We're having to learn some extra songs.
Just say I was a harsh interrogator and I got it out of you.
I think I can say it because why not? But I think we're doing, I mean, I hope we practice this and get it, but I think we're doing the whole first album from beginning to end on one set.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And then the other set will be a mixture of things. And then the third set, we haven't really communicated yet about that.
Okay. and so how many players do you have in the band now? Because again, I've seen it just as a two-piece, you know?
Yeah, this time there's five of us. It's going to be me, Toby. Then we're going to have Matt Rezovich on violin and other instruments, multi-instrumentalist. He's kind of our secret weapon. He's been with Blackheart for a really long time. Early, first record, been around.
Yeah.
He didn't play on the first record, but he played in the show, some of the shows we were doing at that time on the first record. So it was, and then moved away. He'd always come around and did a lot of touring with us too. Scott Mercado on bass is playing with us, and he has also been somebody that has always played with us off and on over the years. And then on drums is Zeke Howard. And Zeke played in a band called Love is Laughter.
Oh, of course. I saw them. Actually, I saw them with Modest Mouse, believe me.
Yeah, so funny, you know, kind of relation, you know. Yeah. But we've been playing, like, this album's going to be with several different drummers. We're going to hopefully have different drummers who've played with us over the years kind of play set. And so this tour that we're doing here is we're going to just play some of the newer songs, not a whole bunch, but mm-hmm. we're going to play some of them. Because we're not done with the record yet. So I don't really kind of consider this like some new unveiling of Black Heart. I would rather kind of that happen a little bit later once we have the new album, because I kind of want to rethink of like how we do things for this next album and how our show is presented and take it more like a thing we're bringing to each place we go to, more than like a stage that's there for us to stand on.
Yeah. Sure. Well, and then also you get the chance to, you know, when you have newer stuff, you can kind of test it out a little and sort of see if it, you know, does this do what it's supposed to do, or, you know, what is it doing?
Yeah. So, yeah, I want to get into that, finishing the album. So this tour is, but it's a good place to test a few for sure.
Yeah. Great. And awesome does happen at all, right? I mean, that's
absolutely. None of us are dead yet. We can go do this.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, that's real, unfortunately. That's very real.
It is very real.
Yeah. So that's super cool, Paul. I hope that I get to see some of this at some point. It's been many moons since I've seen Black Heart Procession play. So I would love that. Anything else that you can talk about that's coming up on the agenda?
Huh. If you want to see some of my knives, you can also go to shopsoet.com. That's our store.
I'll put that in the show notes as well. So
shopsoet.com for that's kind of fun stuff, but also Acid Works. We covered a lot of the music stuff. We're doing pretty good, man.
I feel good about it. I mean,
yeah, I feel great.
I'm just super pissed that we played San Diego in May. And I could have visited the store, and we didn't do it.
Well, please, next time you come into town, let me know, and I'll show you around town. I'll try and make it to the show.
I think March. I'm not sure. I can tell you when we get off here.
When you come to San Diego, like, I'm great, spontaneous.
Okay, very good, very good. So last thing, Paul, this is the last thing I ever ask folks on the show. It's only canned question that I ever ask, and you can choose to interpret this however you like. It's the only one that's already in the bank. It's the only canned question that I ask. Why do you do what you do?
What else am I gonna do? I don't know. Nothing else to do. I mean, work on things you enjoy, make and create, and enjoy life the best you can.
Solid advice.
Yeah. Spend it with friends and family. Thank you, man.
Thanks, sir. Much appreciate.
Appreciate you all.
Take care. See you down the road.
All right. See ya.
There he goes. Paul Jenkins, what a cool guy. Appreciate that guy so much. So great talking about Blackheart. Love that band. 3 Mile Pilot. Ugly Casanova, so much great stuff. Let's listen to some Blue Tears, everybody.
my time spent with you before the war. And now these blue tears, they keep falling down from my lonely eyes. They're falling for you. I can see the ship's reflection in your eyes from behind. Telling that I have no other way, and it was hard to turn and leave. And now these blue tears, they keep falling.
All right. Some Black Heart Possession for you right there.
Blue Tears. That's off of
two. I should, you know what? If I was thinking about it, I would have put something off of one because it's being reissued. Adoy. Sorry, everybody. Well, there you go. This has been another great episode of Cool News Talk Protonic Reversal. Thank you so much for listening to it. Oh, yeah. Check out Black Heart. They're on Instagram. Acid Works as well. Acid Works Manipulation. I'll deep link in the notes. All that good stuff. The show airs Thursdays, streaming live, 8 Eastern, 7 Central, 6 Mountain, 5 Pacific. Podcast later everywhere. No ads, no sponsors, no kidding. ProtonicReversal.com. Always free for those archives. But if you like the show and you want to get episodes sooner, $1 a month at patreon.com/ProtonicReversal helps that goal.
Let's get the lights on this joint too, which I deep appreciate.
Thanks for folks liking, subscribing to your platform of choice, sharing around the episodes, all that helps people discover the show. Beats back the algorithm, which is a very nice thing to do. I deeply appreciate that as well. Leaving a review. Yeah, they make it really hard to leave these reviews. By the way, if you get criticism, keep it to yourself. Only leave us a review if it's great. Thanks. Much appreciated there, too. Back at it for Don Caruso 2026, Wim Goldsmith of San Diego Real Estate and Assertion, Foo Fighters, Mike Watt collaborator, coming next week. Looking forward to that. Stay tuned. Yeah, we got a few solid months of programs coming at you. So thanks for sticking with it, as always. What else? Into electricity. I guess we go see Black Heart Procession on tour, I guess.
Can you hear me now?
And stay safe out there.
Out on Route 128.
We'll check you later.
I got my radio on. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Welcome to my top 10. I'd like to thank our sponsor. But we haven't got a sponsor. Not if you were the last man on Earth. She was prepared to prove it. This one goes out to a special girl. But there is no special girl! It's the Xander Radio! The last announcer plays the last record. The last what? Leaves the transmitter. Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now? Broadcasting if there's no one there to receive.
Radio. As we come to the close of our broadcast day, got my radio on.